They say to truly understand someone, you must walk a mile in their shoes. Well, at Lexus, we designed the ES with you in mind every step of the way. From class-leading legroom to positioning the touchscreen 4 inches closer. Everything in the Lexus ES, a direct reflection of you. Click the banner to discover more. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
2022 ES versus 2021-2022 competitors. Information from manufacturers' websites as of 5/3/2021.
Duncan is already ready for you to fall hard because fall starts whenever you say it starts, which means it's time for you to get your fall refresh. Grab a new Blood Orange Duncan Refresher. Blood orange and cranberry flavors mixed with fall spices. America runs on Duncan. Present participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Welcome to the special edition of the Hallicaster Chain Show podcast, Ukraine at War. My guest this week is Franz Sedlmayr. Once a close friend and business partner of Vladimir Putin, until the friendship and business relationship met with the reality of the economic jiu-jitsu of the newly elected president, Boris Yeltsin, and the political and economic ambitions of Putin. Sedlmayr's considerable assets soon expropriated by the new government. Sedlmayr went to war with Putin to retrieve what was his and won, waging a 20-year campaign against the Kremlin and Putin, ultimately winning more than 100 court cases and foreclosing on Russian state property in Western Europe, becoming, for the record, the only individual ever to collect money from Vladimir Putin's Russia. Franz knows Putin, and he understands Russia in ways others don't. The discussion you are about to hear is brutally frank and in parts disturbing, as reality often is. Let's talk with Franz Sedlmayr.
Hi there, Franz. How are you? Nice to have you here,
really?
My good friend. I feel like we're old friends. We've done this so many times together. You're my go-to guy on all things Russia. Franz, these are some strange times. I know you've told me a little bit personally what's been going on in your own household with your wife being Russian and my being Russian. I talked to you about it. But I want to talk in a little different kind of avenue here. I think the last time you and I talked, I was looking back to see, was about the Biden-Putin summit. Can you believe that?
It's right. A long time ago, right?
Right. So now here we are. We're talking about, listen to what I'm going to say, the Biden-Putin war. Because despite everything that's going on, I also think that's in the mix here. And I don't say it lightly. And I'm wondering what you think. I mean, Putin certainly initiated the war with Ukraine. He has his reasons for going in there, you know. But is Ukraine as proxy for the U.S., NATO, and the allies? I mean, this is complex. Let me give you a minute to sort of put yourself out there and what you're thinking.
Well, to put Ukraine into perspective, you could say that Ukraine is very open to the West, compared to many of the former states of the Soviet Union that are now all independent, 15 altogether, including Russia, Ukraine, and a couple of others are looking westwards. And the reason they're looking westwards is because they can look into Poland, they can look into Romania, they can look into Slovakia, all these neighboring countries that became members of the European Union, and they have seen that the last 20, 25 years, when these countries joined the European Union, that actually life got better. The schools got better, the roads got better, the foodstuff was available, everything went better. And that's how the Ukrainians look at Europe. When they look at Russia, the Russians, for all things, have, and I think it becomes evident these days, a tendency to be able to treat others, like the Ukrainians, more like dependents and not as equals. And I think this is the deep-rooted problem here. When I went to Kiev, I mean, this is already 3 years ago, I felt the same breath of fresh air that I felt in Leningrad, and Moscow in the early 1990s. And this breath of fresh air not only entails all the positive stuff, but they are all struggling with the same, child-type issues for younger democracies, for example, corruption. for example, crime. So this is all stuff they have had to work out. So Ukraine is a democracy, but it's in no way a perfect country. And when Ukraine started turning westwards, the Russians reacted very badly to it, especially Putin, because they lose a sphere of influence. For Putin, it's a matter of controlling it politically. But at the same time, every time he gets into trouble at home, that is, with people, you know, going into the street demanding basically that he steps down one day and they get someone else they can actually elect for a change, then he starts a conflict somewhere. And Ukraine here is no exception. I think what's more the exception is the timing. And the timing of the invasion is such that he looks at Europe and he looks at NATO, he looks at Joe Biden, he looks at, you know, people like Olaf Scholz, which is our new chancellor that replaced Angela Merkel. He smells weakness. And the weakness he smells not only comes from the personalities, because, you know, Biden is a little bit older. He's a little bit, from his perspective, I say that, weaker. They look at Kamala Harris. It's pretty evident she's not very experienced when it comes to foreign relations. He looks at Olaf Scholz. That's a guy that comes practically out of the peace movement. He looks at other problems that we have in Europe that also were reinforced through the pandemic now that we went through for the last 2 years. He looked at the situation in Afghanistan. When the West packed up, they packed up in such a hurry that it made leaving Vietnam look like an extended affair. I mean, the Germans evacuated the German armed forces, most of them army, and they were in such a hurry that they forgot two of their guys on the ground. This is something where Putin says to himself, "Wow, if history offers an opportunity to take down Ukraine, that's the opportunity."
We're going to talk about Zelensky in a minute, but I also think a lot of this came out of the setup that Trump gave him and all the people on the right there and the games that they were playing with Zelensky. I don't think you can push that away. But I did bring up the point that there's a Biden-Putin war. And if Biden is NATO, if Biden is the U.S., if Biden is, you know, Germany, I do think there's something personal that's gone on here. And we can talk about Putin as you know Putin, Franz, because, yeah, he wants his old USSR back. He wants it, and he wants it yesterday. I don't think he's going to get there. But let me take it to this. Let me take it to the fact that, so now he invades Ukraine because of all the reasons you say, and I add my two cents, and we find out that the great military might have of the old Soviet Union ain't there. What happened that with that?
Well, what do I compare it to? It's the West has been getting all the messages out of Russia how much money and effort they spend on modernizing their army, cutting back from an army largely made up of conscripts that serve between, 15 months and 2 years, depending on where they go, Army, Navy, Air Force, etc. How much money they put into development of new battle tanks, of new ships, of hypersonic missiles, of thermobaric missiles, etc., etc., and bombs, of course. And then this war starts, and the invasion starts, and the first thing we see is that they roll in with relatively lightly armored forces and airborne forces. I mean, there hasn't been much of an airborne deployment since Dien Bien Phu in Vietnam by the French in the Foreign Legion. So this is the first time we saw that on a larger scale. And the expectation that Putin had in everybody was they're gonna welcome us with open arms. They're gonna bring out bread and salt, and they're gonna be so happy that we liberated them. And this nonsense, actually, he believed, and we believed, that he actually has such a modern army that's something to be reckoned with. And when the campaign didn't go the way it went, they went in and they sent in more heavy armor. That was all the tanks and all the, you know, the, what they call the Stalin organs, the, mm-hmm. the missile launchers and heavy artillery and, you know, cruise missiles and what do you have. And then the Ukrainians basically picked them off, partisan style, by approaching the armor and destroying it. And whenever they saw a supply convoy, they went up and tried to blow it to hell. And part of it really worked well. So the partisan tactics worked pretty well. And then the general staff went to Putin, that is his chief of staff, Gerasimov, and a bunch of the brass guys, and basically told Putin, I said, you know, we cannot win the war unless we employ the tactics that we always use to win something. Mm. And the tactics were always very simple, very straightforward. We're going to kill everything on the ground, and we're going to destroy any structure we will find, and we will make kaput all the infrastructure, and then we're just going to march in our people on foot. That's the idea. That's what we are seeing now.
That's not going to work.
Because the Ukraine are putting up a hell of a fight.
Right. That's not going to work either. So here he is, and before we go on further with that, let's talk about Zelensky. This guy has captured the hearts and imaginations of the world. I mean, who would have thought he, you know, the comedian, the Dancing with the Stars winner. You just never know where heroes come from. And boy, let me also say this. Do we need a hero in this world right now? He's perfect for that role.
Isn't that true?
Right? And the thing about him that's so... Yeah. He's smart. We should have known how smart he was because of the way he dealt with Trump and you know, being, what's the word I'm using when Trump was trying to get him to do, give him info on Biden. I thought he handled that very well at the time too. So I wasn't all that surprised by the power of the man, and the humanity of the man. And I find him fascinating in that way versus Putin and his savagery. Which I think is also something to look at, because if one is coming off as this big moral, you know, standard bearer, and the other one is just coming as, you know, as a brutal murderer, killer, savage, whatever, that's not going to work either, which I think is built into the cake now. The world has got enough with COVID. They don't want to deal with any more of this. So it's interesting to me that Putin's not even handling that well. The PR part of it isn't going well.
Putin lives on a different planet.
Clearly.
Imagine. I mean, Putin, I told you that before, is a little bit like Trump because he doesn't like to read anything. He doesn't go into details of stuff. He likes to hear messages which are cut down to a minute or two. And based on what people tell him, he will make a decision. And he doesn't think much of consequences. I mean, when he marches into a place like Ukraine, he doesn't consider what the West's reaction will be, per se. This is really irrelevant. For him, it's more important if you take someone serious on the other side. He didn't take serious Biden, Scholz, or anyone, and especially he didn't want to take serious this comedian in Ukraine. And you know, that shows you how much of a strategist Putin is. Putin is not a strategist at all. And he doesn't think long term, and he permanently tends to be fed information that people believe he wants to hear, because everyone is afraid to give bad news or to criticize him. We just had an episode with his minister of economics, a lady, that went in to meet with him, and then Putin said, "What's up with this inflation? Do something." And she said, "There's nothing I can do. I didn't cause this mess." To which Putin says, "Well, do you think I did?" And then she says, "Do you think I did?"
Well,
so that's where it is. He's being faced with this reality.
But yet, he had enough presence of mind, if you will, to stage that whole thing last week, the Trump-style rally, right? And, you know, brought it. And he's doing everything he can to keep people off the streets because I don't think he does. And I'm curious as to what you think. He does not have the people of Russia with him. He has the old people out in the woods, you know, who don't have internet and aren't modern day people. But the people who were living in Moscow and other great cities in Russia and living the good life, this is freaking them out. He doesn't have them.
Putin is freaking them out.
Putin is freaking him out. But I also, because of what he's doing and these and the sanctions, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But what I'm saying is, I don't know that he, I mean, how many people have been really rallying, going out until he put in these, you know, just horrid, you know, we catch you on the street, you're going to jail for 15 years. So I don't know that he's standing in Russia is what it was. That's my point. Maybe I'm going around that the long way.
Well, Russia is now turned into a Stalinist society. You can see that when he meets with his cabinet, with his security council, or anyone else. He talks and everybody else makes notes. That's what we have seen with the oligarchs before. So that part is known. The game on the ground has changed. You go out to demonstrate. It used to be that people understood they were demonstrating. There was a risk of being arrested. Now, of course, they're going away for 3, 4, 5 years. And when they mentioned the war, it could be as much as 15 years. But that was one thing. But now they're also arresting people who just happen to be standing close by or walking close by going about their daily affairs.
It's ugly.
So practically nobody wants to go out into the street anymore. It's just like it was under Stalin. And this thing he had in the stadium, that was more like the Reichspartei talk under Hitler. He takes German elements of stuff. And he mixes it in with Stalinism. And that's what makes it so dangerous. He brings in the race card. He accuses people in Ukraine, the government, that Ukraine is run by a bunch of fascists. And when you look at it, he is the one that employs the symbols, you know, that fascists used. The famous set that is painted on their military equipment that's running around there.
Right.
He is the one that now does the ethnic cleansing. I mean, they actually take people like in Mariupol in the tens of thousands and they deport these people to Russia. This is something that the Nazis did. This is something that Stalin did. Stalin deported, you know, all types of nationalities from where they were to places out in as far as away as Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, just to get rid of them, and he settled Russians there instead.
But listen, I agree, and I have to say this. Of all the things that have come out, this, to me, his taking the people right out of Ukraine, you know, on trains into Russia, is so, so beyond the pale. It is bizarre to me that it has gotten the least amount of coverage of all the stories that are coming out of there. Is it to you? Because it's shades of Nazi Germany, for God's sakes.
Absolutely, and I totally agree. You know, and I have been the call in the desert for the last 20 years of stuff, and that surpassed what I could have imagined. That is just this extra step that even I didn't see coming. This brutality and this taking stuff literally from the darkest hours of Europe. In turning that back into reality, I think part of the reason this is not getting enough coverage is because the press, I have to say, there is equally afraid that we might slide into a larger conflict with Russia than currently our politicians are. And that's exactly
the point of it is.
Putin is playing.
Exactly. 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 But I want to say this to you because we're going to talk about the press. The reality of it is we have to talk about this whole thing. The response to this, I think Zelensky has been remarkable up until a point, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. And well, let me talk about that now just to say, you know, he's willing to sit down and make deals with Putin. I don't think anybody should be making any deals. I'm curious to what you think. And the reason I'm saying that is Putin should be rewarded on any level for illegally invading another country? No, I don't think the deal has to be made in a deal between Zelensky and Ukraine and Russia. I think you have to take Putin, and what was the old way they used to say it? They used to say it in the Civil War, they take him out to sea. I don't see how you ever arrive at a compromise here without telling Putin, you can have anything you want in all of Europe. It's all yours. Curious.
Yep.
Yes, do you agree?
That's exactly what it comes down to. Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. You have to understand something with the negotiations that are on at the moment. Zelensky is calling for negotiations because the West is pressuring him to do so. The Ukrainians are not interested in a negotiated settlement of this at all. They want to kick Russian butt, I'm sorry to say. They want to get the Russians out of Ukraine. That's their ultimate goal. And, you know, there was a great commentator just recently. He said, the Ukrainian may not be able to win the war, but they can't afford to lose this war. And that's where they stand. The Russians are going into negotiations with low-level people to negotiate, by the way, to basically signal we are ready to talk, not to Zelensky, we are ready to talk to the West in principle, as long as they agree to our terms. Putin is not someone who will, you know, cut down from his list of demands just to meet, just so he can have a settlement with the West. I mean, for him, just the fact that he sends negotiators into talking to Zelensky is already a problem. So both sides are not serious about the negotiations. The point of time for negotiation hasn't even come yet.
Of course.
Because Putin keeps on pushing. He keeps on killing. He keeps on bombing. He keeps on doing all this horrible stuff to people. And so for us to even think, I mean, I hear many voices in Europe and also in the United States, we should negotiate with Putin. There's nothing to negotiate. There are certain things in life, that's what I call human rights, which are not, you know, you can't negotiate over that. That's the minimum standards. And that's something we all have to get used to, that, and that I think that what describes or what makes Zelensky so important. Zelensky is like JFK, is like Ronald Reagan, he's like Maggie Thatcher, he's like Churchill in a way.
Oh, he's very Churchill.
And that's what we have been missing for the last 20 years. People who can actually and actively lead and stare the other guy in the eye and basically tell him, back off, buddy. And this is what we're missing.
Okay, so I want to go back to something you said, but you did say that you don't think Zelensky is more being forced into a negotiation than you think he's willing to really do. Because I would lose it if he were to capitulate to Putin. He won't do it.
He has no reason for that. He's doing that to keep the other guys happy who supply military equipment at the moment.
All right. Okay. So let's get to it.
He's directly responding to Biden and to Scholz and to Macron. That's the three.
So let's go back. So Russia invades Ukraine, and the response is by NATO, this whole thing about the no-fly zone. Then, you know, and then the famous line by Biden, which is, we will not do hand-to-hand combat with Russia. No fly zone, that's it, and we are not going to World War III. Now, I'm a fan of Joe Biden's on some levels, because I think the guy is a good man, and, you know, particularly after what we've just been through. But what a dumb thing to say, in my opinion, because what are you taking anything off the table for? And to take it off, and let me also say this, friends, and to take it off the table may lead to World War III. Okay.
Thank you.
We agree.
I not only agree with you, I think we have seen with Joe Biden, and let me tell you this, you know, I think Joe Biden, like you said, he's not a bad person at all. And he's been around in D.C. for a long time. He has been, I like the little stuff around him. He takes his grandchildren to Dachau, to the concentration camp, to show them. He's one of the biggest fans of the Munich Security Conference. He is really outgoing when it comes to stuff like this. But somehow in the aging process, I might say, he's not a young person anymore. He's doing what many older people are doing. They are shying away from a real conflict. And sometimes it's necessary to take a stand and to actually come up to say, okay, this is it. We're going to have a conflict from here on unless you back down. And he failed to do that. And when he and Putin met last time, he basically laid out something to the tune like, bad things will happen if you're not nice to Ukraine, if you're trying to invade, you're going to be sorry. And Putin is laughing because he doesn't take Biden serious. And you remember, I told you, Putin did not take Trump serious. I mean, this guy thinks he ate the wisdom by the spoonful, as we say in German.
Well,
he doesn't have respect for anyone except himself. He has a narcissistic personality disorder. That's what's wrong with him. And the longer he stayed in office, the more that became evident. And it wasn't aided by the fact that he spent the last 2.5 years sitting in a bunker alone with
right.
his family.
Well, I agree with that. But I want to go back because we have to go back a few years. Because the fact of the matter is, it wasn't just Joe Biden. This goes
exactly,
back.
Yes.
Because there are a whole host of American presidents who every time Putin started to move in, you know, into Crimea and to Georgia and you know, northern or western, whatever that is, Ukraine, nobody said a word. Or when he went into Syria and absolutely devastated the place. Nobody,
right.
you know, what was the famous line from Obama, you know, don't cross that red line. He crossed it and Obama did nothing. So it's not just Joe. It's something that's going wrong in this country that used to always be measured. Certainly Roosevelt was measured before he got into World War II. But measured, but effective when the time was right. And I think there are a series of mistakes going on. I don't know if it's coming from the generals. I listen to those generals on you know, cable news. I'm sure you do, too. And my head, I'm slapping the top of my head again, you know, like, what? They're all scared to death of Putin, and he knows it. So why should he stop?
I totally agree. I mean, listening to the generals now, I mean, on Fox News and MSNBC and CNN, they all have their generals. It's like listening to the weather report. It changes every day, right?
I have never, you know, I don't know that everybody watches to the depths of the press that you and I do. But geez, Franz, I mean, this is really like bizarre. And maybe Zelensky can wind up winning it. I'd be curious what happens in the meeting with NATO next Thursday and Friday, whatever this thing is going to go on. I saw today that Macron is allowing Renault to have their cars go back into manufacturing in Russia.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
the thing
here is that all these guys in NATO are going to get together. And they're all trying to convince each other it's not as bad as it looks. The only thing we have to do, we have to maneuver. We give them just enough stuff so they can survive, you know, keep them in the fight, so to speak. But at the same time, they shy away from giving them the equipment that they need to get rid of all the remote located missile sites, the military airfields that their bombers start from, you know, and basically give them stuff with enough reach. You know, drones, like Predator drones and all, everything they would need, they do not give to them now. This drives me mad.
I don't understand it.
It means to me that NATO is not, is actually not even interested in giving the Ukrainians a chance to win this. You know, when the invasion took place, you remember what happened. Biden offered Zelensky a ride out of the country.
Right.
Boris Johnson offered them London as a place for an exile government for Ukraine. Scholz said, we are not going to deliver any arms to Ukraine. Doesn't matter what happens. Macron said, he broke his promise to me. That was more important than anything else. And then the Israeli prime minister went in to negotiate. Israel has, by the way, the only intelligence service in the world right now that has extensive human intelligence coming out of Russia is Israel. And that's owed to the fact that a good 20-25% of all Israelis come out of Russia. You know, they all went
right.
home to all went to the
Jewish homeland.
To the homeland, to the old homeland, so to speak. So, and he comes out of the meeting with Putin, gets on the phone with Olaf Scholz and with
The economy is crazy right now. All-time high inflation, bearish stock market, rising home prices and interest rates. How do you figure it all out? Make your money go further and work harder with a certified financial planner professional from Facet Wealth. Financial planning used to focus on retirement, but with Facet, a dedicated expert guides you through every financial decision. Facet advisors are certified financial planner professionals and fiduciaries. That's just a fancy way to say they have the best training, and they're legally bound to do what's in your best interest. This isn't just about investments. You get an entire team of experts within insurance, taxes, estate planning, and budgeting to make complex financial decisions easy. Facet has a simple flat fee, no hidden charges, and with nothing to sell, there are no commissions. Visit TryFacetWealth.com for 2 months free off your first year of financial planning. That's TryFacetWealth.com.
Facet Wealth is an SEC-registered investment advisor. This is not an offer to buy or sell securities, nor is it investment, legal, or tax advice.
Do you think all premium fuels are the same? Well, your engine doesn't. Shell V-Power Nitro Plus helps keep your engine running like new because it's engineered to defend against four main engine threats: gunk, wear, corrosion, and friction. So next time, choose Shell's most advanced fuel ever. It's fuel for thought. In engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Nitro Plus premium gasoline.
And with Zelensky, and he tells Zelensky, you have to surrender. Now, come on. If that's the attitude of the West, and we are actually not in a much better position today, then basically that shows me that our politicians were of the opinion, actually, we should just give Putin Ukraine, and then he will leave us alone because he has no other targets in mind. And that's wrong thought process.
Of course.
That will lead us to World War III.
I listen every day. I just go, huh? I mean, I do. I'm just like, I am so flummoxed by the abject fear that they have of them, as if we don't have nuclear weapons too. That's the other thing that's just so utterly bizarre.
Right.
You know, you want to kill you. I'm sorry.
Mitt Romney got it right. He got it right when he ran for president. He says the largest, the most dangerous adversary we have is Russia. That's years ago. And now he said something which I think is spot on. He says we shouldn't worry about what the Russians will do to us. The Russians should worry what we will do to
right,
them.
Right.
And that's exactly what he comes down to.
But, you know, again, that's interesting because, you know, he grew up in that whole, you know, era of, you know, the crazy with Russia. That, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis and stuff like that. And you watched his father, who was in Congress, also having to fight that.
Right.
I think a lot of the people have forgotten that. And a lot of them aren't even aware that some of that was happening. I don't get me started in American Congress because they're all nuts. There's not a sane one in the bunch. But all right, I want to go to this. I want to go to the sanctions. And I have to laugh about this a little bit because if the sanctions were working, Putin would be gone. They're not working. And I understand this whole thing about, you know, it's going to take a while to implement or whatever.
Well,
but let me just say, you know, you've got the thing with the oil and you can't completely cut off the oil. And, you know, good old your guy in Germany, you know, I don't know about him. You'll have to tell me about him because I don't get him at all. But, you know, because of all people in the world to understand what this is really all about, you know, you know, I think of all the people. I think of the current sitting queen who, you know, was a 17-year-old girl, was sitting in the UK and having bombs rain down on her and didn't have food to eat. But she we can't even endure 5 minutes of maybe not having heat. You got to help me here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, first of all, the sanctions, it's the same as with the ordnance and the military equipment and ammunition we are delivering to the Ukrainians. Instead of doing the sanctions 100%, they're doing, you know, maybe 50%. And the same is true with everything we send there. It's not enough to win the war. It's not enough to stop the war. And I think our politicians know that. They all still think negotiated settlement possible with Putin. And that's not the case. They will learn that the hard way. Let's talk about Olaf Scholz. Olaf Scholz is a lawyer by trade. He is born and raised in Hamburg. He's a very dry guy. He speaks with a very, how do I say that? He speaks very slow. He speaks without emotion. The guy never smiles. I mean, when he's walking, it looks like you could steal his shoes with him not even realizing. That's how he talks. He's not guy like Zelensky that's outgoing, you know, that they could talk to a crowd and people would love him, you know. He's just a dry administrator type, and he can't translate this whole situation. Part of it is that's not his forte. He never was into foreign relations. The guys in politics out there to see what's happening on the other side of Germany's border. He's sort of a person that was elected to be a candidate for chancellor by his party, pretty much based on consent from all wings and center of the Social Democrats. So the left, the more conservative Social Democrats, and the mainstream guy said, well, if no one else will volunteer, we'll take him because he's not going to pin anything to be chancellor. He's completely out of his league with this problem with Putin and Ukraine, of course. And that explains it.
Well, and that's just a bit scary because all of them, you know, are finding all the reasons that they don't want to go to bat and end this. And it takes me to this. In the very beginning of all of this, I tweeted, and I got in so much trouble for tweeting this, but I said, take the guy out. Who is Putin today? Putin is a terrorist in designer clothing. He isn't doing anything less outrageous than Osama bin Laden did on 9/11. He's just leveling Ukraine. He leveled a whole town in Syria. The man is a maniac, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you and I can have this conversation. We have, by the way, many times. Is he insane? You know, is he not? You know, has he changed? Is he a KGB, you know, character? Or, you know, nowadays they say, oh, he was just a low-level KGB guy. You know, he's not all that KGB. He's just the actions speak louder than words. I mean, today he went and he killed children in a hospital.
Oh,
he's insane. Because that's insanity, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
But here's my point.
Right.
You gotta take him out.
He has no empathy.
None.
He has no empathy. He has no sympathy for others. He doesn't feel their pain. He doesn't feel any responsibility for committing war crimes. And, you know, in a way, I mean, that has all the elements of a planned genocide. I mean, when he switched from, you know, just an invasion to bombing the place to hell in Ukraine, it had all the markings of the beginning of a...
Well, it is, you know...
So the problem is to get to him. I don't think there's any appetite for any of the NATO members or anyone to even sponsor that idea. I mean, you remember that there's a German diplomat retired. His last name is Ischinger. And Mr. Ischinger was the one that chaired the Munich Security Conference. And I just saw an interview with him. And he says the following. He says, I can't understand this talk about Putin and others to be subjected to a war crimes trial in The Hague by the International Court of Justice. Because if we do that, who would we negotiate with?
Oh, my God.
You see this this rationale? This rationale is so far away from reality. Putin actually feels pretty safe as far as we are concerned. He doesn't expect us to come after him anytime now or anytime afterwards. After this Ukraine campaign is over, he's more careful with his own guys. And I'm not talking the members of his Security Council, the cabinet and the private, you know, and the people he has around in the president's office. He's more careful with the young technocrats. That's the guys that he brought into the positions when he got rid of all his old people he brought up, the first generation guys that he brought with him from St. Petersburg and from the KGB and the FSB and the GRU, and put him into positions of power. He got rid of all these guys in 2016, and he replaced them with young people. The age range has been between 35 and 50, and these are handpicked people that he trained personally, and he trained them like Machiavelli. And these guys are smart enough to see an opportunity when there's blood in the water, they're the ones who are going to take him out. That's his biggest danger. And these guys are sitting in all the intelligence services. They're sitting in the armed forces. They're sitting in Russia's cabinet under the prime minister, and the prime minister himself, who, by the way, is of Armenian descent. That's the guys who are more dangerous for him than anybody else.
So that gets you to this. So, you know, they want to stop him without guns, without aircraft, whatever it is that they want to do, or they want the Ukrainians to be their sacrificial lambs. I'm talking about the West and NATO and the Allies. And so they're making, you know, Ukrainians their sacrificial lambs to do their bidding for them. And you guys get yourselves killed and your children killed and your world crumbled. We're not doing it for you. Okay, fine. But we don't want Putin to leave this with any real power either. But we're afraid of him. I mean, just think of the this is like a wacky Aesop's fable. How bad could it get in the thinking wherever you turn? None of it makes any sense. Your point is that the only way to get rid of him is an inside job with his new technocrat cabinet, so to speak. And I don't know how you do that either, because as long as they feel like they're on the winning side of things, and you know, they're not going to get rid of him. I mean, why would they do that? Because they're all sitting pretty in it. And so we're really at a very strange place in this whole dynamic right now. The oligarchs have the money, and he can't function without real money unless China comes in, and I think they've scared China a little bit. What do you think there?
I think the Chinese are the quartermaster of Putin. They will deliver whatever he needs. It's in China's interest to keep Russia in the fight. There's no question about it, irrelevant of what they say.
Ah, see, I'm not completely sure of that, because they do much more trading with the West, and if the West cuts them off, they don't have any money coming in. That is a card. That is
the,
a card
the West
NATO can play.
Cut off China's trade. That's not going to happen, Hallie. The Chinese know it.
And you think that's because the West can't live without their product?
Well, excuse me. We have outsourced all the production of goods.
That's my point. That's my point. That we can't live without their product, so therefore we have no control over the Chinese either. We're really between a rock and a hard place here. That's really pretty bizarre. Like I said, this may be one of the worst positions America and NATO has been in since World War II. Agreed?
Well, it's time to man up. It's time to man up.
That's why you and I are talking, because we agree. It's time to man up. I don't know how you do that. You can't teach old dogs new tricks, and that's the problem. There are a lot of old dogs in the West right now. No new tricks.
I did a post on LinkedIn just recently, and basically I said it's not just that we have to overhaul our military to be able to actually do something. I'm talking more Europe than the United States now. But we also have to put back people into government that are young enough and have the coolness and the determination to deal with a problem when it appears. And this is what we have. We have a bunch of bureaucrats that sit there and hope nothing will happen. And then things happen, and then they write letters, and the letters say something like, "We are very upset." And then nothing will happen, of course. Then they write another letter and say, "Oh, we are very, very, very upset now," and still nothing will happen. And then we have an invasion. That's the fact of life.
I have to go back to something. I want to go back to the crime, calling him a war criminal. This is interesting. Last week, they caught Joe on an off moment, and he told the truth, and he said, "Yes, I see him as a war criminal." Putin went bananas. Do you remember? And he said, "You're close to crossing a line if you're going to call me a war criminal."
Yeah.
5 seconds later, you know that State Department and everybody else put out the, you know, the edict. You do not use the word war criminal again. And there's, and you have not heard it since. You've heard every way of saying it without saying that Putin is a war criminal. Just that in and of itself tells you how hamstrung they've made themselves and how fearful they are of Putin. So listen to me. We get to this. They're that afraid of Putin. Now what? Now what? If he's not, if he knows how afraid they are on every avenue and every turn, what's left? I mean, really, what's left?
Well, that's the whole thing. We have people in our governments, in our ministries, in our military even, and I'm talking not just the United States, all across the board in the West, in NATO, that are more afraid of Putin than they need to, because nobody dares to think it through. They all cater to politics, and politics is made up by undecisive people who have been in politics too long. You know, what we need is we urgently need fresh blood. So I mean, if I would be Joe Biden right now, Kamala Harris, you know, I would really think about stepping down, honestly, because they cannot win that conflict with that type of an attitude. And I think they actually know it. They just don't know how to handle it. And everybody else hangs on their lips, per se, and they don't want to offend anyone in the White House. And that is true for Berlin. Nobody wants to, you know, offend Olaf Scholz.
Right.
That's the biggest issue that we have. We have a bunch of sheep running after a sheep.
Well,
that's the problem.
I personally am glad that it's Joe Biden who's in that White House than some of the buckaroos that are on the other side right now, who are completely irrational. I mean, you want Trump in there? I mean, no. Sorry. I think that Biden is the right person to be there. I just think that his advisors, and leave Kamala out of it because, you know, it's ridiculous, but just him. He's not a stupid man, and he's done smart things in his life. And he, in a way, he's manipulated this to some degree. He needs to change tactics right now. I actually think that the reason they're having this meeting in NATO is they want to change. They realize they have to change their tactics. I'm going to give them that. They wouldn't be meeting if they didn't see that they've got to go in a different direction, and they have to decide how dangerous is Putin. So I do think that. But I have... So how dangerous is Putin? Is he dumb enough to push the button? Is he angry enough to push the button?
Is
he finished
suicidal.
With... Wait, no, hold it. He's not young. Let me finish. He's not young either, but he's not old. He's got family. Does he really want to kill everybody, including himself? So let's discuss Putin now.
Right. The problem is also, you know, when we talk about Putin at home, people actually want to get rid of Putin. But... they want to get rid of Putin because he's doing away with democracy. The supply situation is not what it used to be, etc. It's going to get worse over the next weeks and months and even years. But as far as Ukraine is concerned, 85% of the Russians think it's a good thing what Putin is doing. This is the crazy part right now. The people have been drinking the Putin Kool-Aid for so long that actually they do not believe what is taking place on the ground in Ukraine at the moment.
Well,
most
so what
are
else? Yeah, but right. But
this is a denazification campaign.
I understand.
That's ridiculous.
But, well, welcome to Russia. What else is new? They've been snowed by their leaders forever and a day. Nothing new there. You know, that's the kind of society that they live in. You know, they want it easy, and they want people to run their lives for them. And, you know, they've been beaten into submission, and that's what it is. And that's always the big problem that Americans and the EU and the Europeans and NATO have in dealing with Russia. But the fact of the matter is that here we are. Here's the situation, and here's what it is. And, you know, it's the how the hell do you get out of it? I frankly believe this is World War III. And
it's the beginning.
Right. And you can call it whatever you want to call it. But that's what it is. And unless somebody gets tight with all of this and really puts the mark down and say, okay, that's it, Putin, you know, no more. That's where it's going to wind up. And it's going to be everywhere. It's going to be, you know, in Russia, and it's going to be, you know, in the EU, right. And it's going to be in Asia, and it's going to be, because there's a lot going on that's all coming to a fore right now. And it's kind of like a realignment. Interesting to me, and I'm talking to you, my German friend, they learned nothing from World War II. They have learned nothing from World War II. We sat back and said, oh, you know, it's going to be fine. We're going to stay out of it. And I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but I want to get here, which is, at the end of the day, it is a morality issue. And when everything else failed in World War II, and it was about you know, money and you know, this, that. At the end, the decision to go in became a moral decision, that we could no longer watch this. And right. Here we are again, and it's the same thing. And again, they're not making the moral decision early enough.
They delayed everything. You know, when we had the standoff with the Russian troops on the border, the United States slowed down the arms shipment to Ukraine. Europe, most of the European countries, didn't want to deliver arms. And the ones that wanted to deliver arms couldn't, because the other European Union members or NATO members were against it. And so now we have to hustle. And instead of hustling, they're still trying to slow it down. And we don't have the same troops. We just have to give them what they need, what they ask for.
Well, but,
you know?
But you're not hearing my point. My point was... My point is that in World War II, they played the same kind of shenanigans. And they hemmed and they hawed. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to lend lease, and they didn't want to get in. And they're watching the lunacy that was going on with Hitler, and they took the same position, you know, because we're afraid, we don't want to. But they're doing it exactly. It's 1939 all over again. They forgot. Right. Remember, you know, the old expression, never forget. They forgot. And they're exactly. Feeding the machine exactly like they did Hitler. Trying to avoid something else. So I, you know, on some days I'm like feeling like, oh my God, here we go again. And other days I'm like, no, they can't make the same mistake twice within 70 or 80 years. Right. No, they can't. But they are. That's what worries me.
Well, but you know, the population, I mean, I'm talking the West now, the people are ahead of the politicians.
Yes. Isn't that interesting? I've been writing
all
that.
Of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been writing that all for the last three weeks. That's weird, isn't it?
If you remember when the Europeans didn't want to deliver arms into Ukraine, even after the invasion, there were hundreds and thousands of people going into the streets all over Europe, and there was a frenzy on the web, and everybody was calling them names until they changed their stance and said, okay, now you're going to deliver some arms. So it shows you the public opinion. It's also another factor these people are looking at.
Well, they're being politicians and not statespeople.
Absolutely.
That's what it boils down to.
Coming back to Putin and using nuclear weapons, the Russians have a nuclear doctrine. And the nuclear doctrine, unlike all the others, of the Russians, says that they can use for tactical strikes. For example, when Putin hopefully will end up in a situation where you know, they might lose this Ukrainian campaign, that might be the most dangerous point in time, for example, for launching a nuclear weapon and on Kiev. You know, that is something that's a real possibility.
I actually think they have different kind of nuclear weapons. It doesn't have to be this big, huge bomb. They've got these tactile things that are just little warheads, right, that they can go into specific things and do the same thing. And there are other chemical weapons they can use, too. I don't know why people think nuclear is so much worse, you know, in terms of those small weapons than the other kind. But I do think they're pushing him to that.
Right. You know, in the 60s, if you remember, the special forces, they had backpack nuclear weapons.
No, I was too young to remember. Sorry. a little levity.
Sorry,
here.
We need it.
But
that was one of the possibilities, you know, a smaller nuclear device in a backpack, and you give it to a special forces guy, he would march it in and have enough time to get out of there. So this concept is not unknown. We have had it too, just that we got rid of it. With the bigger picture of the 80s and the 70s, etc. But what this is something, you know, they're using white phosphorus, I saw today. Are you familiar with that? That's like the Russian type of napalm.
It's bad.
That stuff you drop and it never stops burning. You know, it's just bad things that are happening. But it doesn't cause another big reaction from the West so far. thermobaric missiles. They shoot that stuff in, or they drop bombs from an airplane, and that stuff burns so hot, it creates a vacuum, and people die because of lack of oxygen.
They're actually eviscerated. They're actually eviscerated from that. I mean, it's like there's nothing left.
Right.
It just takes everything away. Look, here's where we are. And
right.
To my mind, it's sort of a nightmare because it can't keep going the way that it's going.
Right.
Because there'll be nothing left of Ukraine. Nothing. I mean, you know,
exactly.
And I have to even put this part in. This is just personal to me, but some of the buildings in that country are just to die for. They're so beautiful. They are literally to die for. And to let that get just completely, you know, trashed. But so where are we? Where do we go from here? What's your thought?
We have to act quickly, decisively. We have to give them anything in our arsenal to help them beat the Russians.
Not for a no-fly zone, are you?
That's not going to happen. And the no-fly zone doesn't do anything. It doesn't do anything to take out the missile sites and the heavy artillery that's located far away from the population centers in Ukraine. You have to give them Predator drones. You have to give them missile systems. You have to give them Patriot missiles. Whatever it takes to hit remote locations, including inside Russia and Belarus.
And
that's
planes?
That's what the game is about.
And planes? MiGs?
Planes also. Of course, mixed, yeah. Well, give them what they need, what they want.
So explain to me, because I haven't been able to figure out what the difference is between giving them, a missile or a whatever other arms and ammunition they're giving them, and a plane. Not even a new plane, an old plane. I can't get that one in my head. I can't.
It has to do with the fact,
Well, I can.
As far as as tactics are concerned, missile systems, Patriot systems, Predator systems, drones, etc., is even better than planes.
Well, that may be, but Zelensky's saying, I want planes. And they're...
Well, give him planes.
They don't want to give
no
him planes.
Problem.
And I'm saying, why aren't you giving him what he's asking for in planes, but you're giving him all this other stuff? If you can give him that, why can't you give him planes? There is no difference in how you fight a war with what kind of stuff. And they're afraid
because
Putin is going to draw a line on planes? Ah.
The strategy of the West, including Joe Biden and Macron and Scholz and everybody else, is if and when Putin takes Ukraine down, then we are rid of the headache. That's what the reasoning is. They were ready to sacrifice Ukraine. What happened is that Zelensky surprised them and the Ukrainian resistance surprised them. So they're sort of stuck in a corner now, the West, actually not wanting Ukraine to win so much, because to give Putin Ukraine might appease Putin. That's their thinking.
Have we learned nothing? Let me go back to never forget. Appeasement doesn't work. Can we go back to
Tell
Crimea? Can we go back? Yeah, look who I'm talking to. I mean, come on. This is crazy stuff. But I think you make the right point. I think they were taken by surprise. They were willing to sacrifice Ukraine until they met Zelensky. I'm now worried that they're
going to.
I'm not worried not of Putin taking out Zelensky, but of NATO taking out Zelensky, because he's their biggest headache. He's out there and he's making headway with the whole world, and everybody's loving him. So he may be their number one enemy. Is that where we leave it for today, and then pick it up in a couple of weeks and see where we are? I mean, have we
Absolutely.
Have we covered all the bases as far as we need to?
Yeah.
I
think so.
Yeah, this has been quite extraordinary. I'm so glad to talk to you, because I think you and I are the only two people in the world who get this.
Right.
I mean, I sometimes feel like I'm so alone out there on this. And I talk to so many people, you know, and so many reporters every day, it's like they're missing it. They're just missing it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it just breaks my heart. But at the end of the day, I'm gonna leave it on this, because I'm going to leave it on this note, because I think it needs to be left there. At the end of the day, this is a moral conversation. We don't like to go there. We think that's weak. Not you and I, but the West thinks that's a weak argument. I think that is...
I mean, just the fact that Putin threatens us.
Right, right.
I think that's rich, right?
Right. I mean, like, that's just bizarre to me. I mean, Putin is controlling the West. Last line.
He's controlling the narrative.
He is controlling the West.
Yes, exactly.
That's it. Nice to talk to you. We'll talk soon.
I've been speaking with Franz Siedlmeier. His book is Welcome to Putingrad, the incredible story of the only man to collect money from Vladimir Putin. For more information on Franz Siedlmeier and for info on how to purchase his book, visit his website at welcometoputingrad.com. Thank you for tuning in to the Helicaster Jane Show, a production of Resec LLC. The Helicaster Jane Show posts new podcasts Wednesdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, and is available at helicasterjane.com and on all your favorite apps. Be sure to visit us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and follow me on Twitter at The Halley CJ Show. Until next time, this is Helicaster Jane.